You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Def Jam Gundy. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 334. Whoo, that's a lot of sodes. On today's very special sode, we're joined by the wonderful Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic. He's the Knicks beat guy over there. If you're not familiar, get familiar. But really, you should be familiar. Shame on you if you're not familiar. Mike's a great writer and a great podcast guest. We talked about all kinds of things. It wound up going about an hour, so we're going to run this interview over the next two podcast sodes. Mike helped me make a little bit more sense of the Joakim Noah situation and what's going on there. We talk about future free agent targets like a Kyrie or a Jimmy Butler. We talk about who the final cut might be, if there will be a final cut. Maybe there'll be a trade. Who knows? We talk about David Fizdale and what he's going to do with making the players earn their time versus prioritizing development. So much more. It's a really good sode. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Before we start, very quickly, 929-377-5103. That's the number for our voicemail bag. Call it, leave a voicemail, and we'll discuss it on a future podcast episode. All right, let's bring in Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic. Let's talk about the Knicks. Hit it, Marf!
Yes!
So, Mike, I'm someone who, when I look at the job that Scott Perry has done as GM of the Knicks in his first year on the job, I'm reasonably satisfied. I think he's doing a pretty good job. The one thing that has vexed me the most, that's confused me the most, and it hasn't come to pass yet, but is the situation with Joakim Noah and the potential stretching of his contract come September 1st. There's been a lot of noise in the press that the Knicks are looking to do this, and I'm hoping that you can help me make a little bit of sense of the Joakim Noah situation. And I'm hoping we can start by just sort of, you have more access than I do as an actual journalist. Once in a while, people mistake me for one, but just to go on record, you know, that's not exactly what I'm doing here. So, like, first of all, how true is it in your opinion that this is what the Knicks are looking to do? Do you have enough from the people that you're talking to say, like, yes, I do think they're going to do this come September?
Look, I don't think there's any reason to doubt. I think it's Woj and Ian Begley who reported that. I have no reason to doubt them at all. And so I believe that to be what the Knicks are inclined to do when September 1st comes around. And that's their plan of action for Joakim Noah. And now, as you've said, I'm not sure that's the best idea.
Uh-huh.
But it seems to be the course of action they've decided upon for themselves.
So that being established, because it does seem that that is almost an inevitability at this point, from your perspective, do you see anything that leads you to believe they're doing it for one reason or another? Like, there's a bunch of things that you could think of, but why do you, if you had to guess, or if you might have some inside info that you can't maybe tell us all the details of, I don't know, but what do you think is the main reason behind this? Like, is it his behavior? Is he that much of a problem? That I have a hard time wrapping my head around. Is it that he just came to the Knicks being promised a different role and now that's not available and he's like, well, you gotta move me? Is it because they really want that spot for developing a player in their long-term plans? Like, how do you sort this out in your head?
I look at it as basically like a a problem or a problem solving of culture, right? So that's what Scott Perry and Steve Mills have talked about so much since they came on the job. And then David Fizdale talked about once he got the job in mid-May, right? That what the Knicks have tried to do ever since last July is set a culture and create one that they think is, responsive to the ideals that they have, reflective of the values that they have. And I think that, look, I think the Joakim Noah contract was bad at first guess, right? At first sight.
Absolutely.
And when the person who signed it was no longer there, so he no longer had a protector. And I think it helps that the Joakim Noah and Jeff Hornacek incident in, what was it, late January? And this is just me kind of postulating, is almost like a pretense to get rid of him too, right? You have a bad contract on your books. You have a culture that you're trying to set. Now, how would it work to reward a guy who got into this incident with your head coach and you kept him away when Hornacek was still there and he maintained some distance from the team now that Fizdale is there and he's not a good player anymore despite being an all-star at one point in his career and he's making a lot of money. And the Knicks are just trying to go a different way. Like, they want to set a new course for the team. So, I mean, in some ways, like, I can understand it from that standpoint, right? Like, you don't want to reward a guy who's been unnecessarily chippy. You don't want to reward a guy who doesn't fit the culture of the organization anymore. And David Fizdale talked about not bringing in veterans who are looking for too big a role, basically, right? Who are looking to eat too much and take away from the young.
Sure.
And that's what Joakim Noah would be doing, right? Like, I mean, almost by default, he's a very, very prideful guy. And I think he would understandably be pissed if he rode the end of the bench, right? Like,
so is that when you, like, because you mentioned culture a couple times, and I don't disagree with you at all. But, like, when I hear that, my first impression is, like, oh, he's a malcontent. You know, do you think the problem is that he is – do you think he'd be unjustifiably running around causing a problem? Like, is that what they think is going to happen? Or is it just that they know he's not in their plans, they don't want to play him even a minute, and given that, he's just going to be so unhappy that it's going to – I guess because I'm just so confused because I never thought of Joakim Noah as this kind of guy who
I don't think he is
a problem maker, right? Yeah, and I'm not saying you're saying that, but...
But it's so I think it's more of the latter, right? Like when someone doesn't fit in your plans at all, and additionally, you know, it's not that he'll like cause a ruckus, but like he's a loud guy who can occasionally be abrasive and he doesn't really have his, you know, friends or protectors in the locker room anymore because Derrick Rose is there, right? Isn't there anymore. And Joakim, Phil Jackson's not there. That's the guy who signed them. And so I don't know. Why take, I guess, from the qualitative perspective, why take an unnecessary risk, right?
Sure.
And the counter argument to that is why cut them much earlier than you have to, right? You have, an entire year, basically? Mm-hmm. Even if they need a salary to sign, I don't know, player X in the summer of 2019, they can cut him then, right? That's easy salary cap manipulation that you can do at that point in time, and you don't need to rush a decision. So maybe the 15th spot on the roster is so valuable that you are... No, but seriously, like, that's what good teams do, right? They make the most out of their own roster spots. Now, again, the player that they're usually cutting at that time is not someone who has such a hefty salary cap burden, right? Like, it's all about the opportunity cost in these situations. I think every roster spot is extremely valuable. But then I also think that it's okay to carry around Joakim Noah for an extra year and try to make it work. And isn't that what you brought David Fizdale in to do and the culture that you're trying to set that makes everyone agreeable and buy in and try to turn Joakim Noah into an asset?
Completely
for a year
agree.
If you can.
Yeah,
if
no, yeah. I completely agree, and that's part of what's so confusing to me, because I do think the best teams, like you said, they really do maximize everything they possibly can, from roster spots to, you know, their training schedule and, like, everything in between, right? They want to be as efficient as possible from top to bottom. It's just that $6 million figure of this stretched salary that's looming over that I'm having a hard time figuring. Do they just... I guess ultimately you don't know exactly what they're thinking, but is it Do you think, if you had to guess, we could stop talking about this soon, I promise. Do you think it's that they think that $6 million is not that big a deal, maybe with rising cap kind of things playing into that equation, or it's really just, you know they want to move on? I guess something we haven't brought up, which some people do, is do you give any credence to this kind of like, it's a good sort of PR move for other players and agents that they're trying to quote-unquote like do right by Joakim Noah and let him go somewhere else? Do you think there's any truth to that?
Yeah, I think it could be that. But I think you're kind of I think you're setting the wrong terms for this move, right? Okay. The $6 million or 6.3 or 6.4, whatever it'll be eventually when it's stretched over 3 years, is absolutely valuable. Like, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And that's not what it's at issue here. It's his roster spot for the next year before they stretch him, right? Like, if you've got a free agent lined up who you need that $6.3 million for, and who you need actually that 12-ish million dollars for, sure. For sure, you take that hit, you stretch it out, you make the cap space that you need him, right? The issue is, like, do you keep him on the roster? The salary really doesn't matter because it's not like you're doing anything with it this year. And do you try to either turn him into a reclamation project, even just maybe turn him into a contributor this year because you have some, a dearth of reliable big men? Or do you, see if something comes about over the next year where you're just not letting him go a year ahead of time for no reason other than just to get rid of him and start from scratch and basically separate yourself further from the Phil Jackson era?
That's I guess you've helped kind of crystallize what's been driving me crazy about this. It's to do it in September. He either has to be such a problem in that locker room, which I have a hard time believing is a possibility, honestly, especially bringing in, you know, gold star communicator David Fizdale, which I'm saying that sort of sarcastically, but it does seem like he is an excellent communicator and that people do respect him. So he's either this much of a problem or they, like, really want Noah Vonleh, for instance, or a Damian Dotson even, you know, whoever, like, on that roster so badly that they've got to cut him. And that's what I have a hard time coming to grips with. Is there a situation in your mind in which this does make sense based on information that we might not have access to? Like, is there a way that they can be doing the right thing in September and it comes down to something that's just like we're never going to be privy to some sort of... Do you think that's possible, or it's more... If it seems like it's an odd situation or an odd decision, it's more likely that it just is an odd decision.
No, because I think it makes a sense just, you know, on the surface, right? Even if you take kind of an Occam's razor approach to all this, like, if you look at it, right, and you keep him for a year, you know, maybe there's a marginal benefit to be gained in terms of an asset that you potentially get for him. Maybe there's not, right? What's that asset going to be? Maybe a second round pick, and maybe the Knicks have just decided, like, look, it's not worth it, right? Whatever can be gained, the ceiling on that is probably not that high. Just to get rid of Joakim Noah, just to finally rid ourselves of him, open up that roster spot, move on, not have David Fizdale worry about placating a cagey veteran along with building a culture and, you know, Kevin Knox and all that type of stuff. I get the argument for that. Like, I understand why it's okay to rid yourself of potential headaches, and not saying Noah would be, but I mean, he was last year, right? So yeah. I totally get all that. And, you know, it's kind of, I guess it depends on more on how much you want to squeeze every possible asset out of your roster and out of your organization, and how much you just want to say sometimes, F it, just let's do it. You know what I mean? Just like, sure, whatever.
Sure, I hear that.
Well, I don't know if that's an oversimplification, but I mean, sometimes that just seems to be a certifiable calculus to do.
Yeah, and they do seem to believe in their development program.
For sure. You know, and that roster spot is valuable. Like, I don't know, is Noah Vonleh going to become the next Trey Burke? Unlikely, because I think Trey Burke was rare in the fact that that doesn't happen very often, but maybe then you cut Noah Vonleh for someone else and you pick another guy up from the G League, and, you know, so the cycle goes, right? That's what the Sixers did for so long, and sometimes, you know, one in every 20 players or whatever it hits.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I want to talk about some other rumors and news items swirling around this offseason, but before we do that, just want to remind our listeners that you guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. your team every day. So, Mike, you got the inside track. Give me the scoop. Who's coming here next year?
Here it is. Here it is. All of them.
Yeah. Yes.
Butler, Kyrie, Jordan out of retirement. Charles Barkley will lose like 30 pounds and Shaq will come back. It'll be like the Monstars.
Perfect. That's all I wanted to know. Do you agree with some of the... I saw something, I think Woj went on a podcast, maybe it was his own podcast, I forget. I saw a tweet about this the other day that he was like, I don't know who it's going to be, but I think the Knicks are going to get a guy next offseason. From your perspective, do you think things have changed enough around the league with the perception of their front office, of the young players they have in place, of maybe their cap situation, forgetting Joakim Noah for a second, that that's more likely than not next offseason?
Oh, look, I think for sure that the reputation has changed league-wide. You know, I think getting rid of Phil Jackson was a big part of that. I think Scott Perry is, he's respected around the league, and there's been a calmness to the Knicks for the last year, right? Yeah. That's worth a lot. And I've had, league people around the league, scouts or whomever, say, look, we think that Fizdale will help the Knicks eventually land someone in free agency, someone notable, right? I mean, that's conjecture on their part too.
Sure.
But I think it kind of speaks to the respect that he engenders amongst players and amongst people around the league, and it explains why there's more optimism around the Knicks. Now, like, if you want to talk about improbabilities, I've been listening to the 538 podcast a lot, and so I think people definitely screw up probabilities a lot. Like, sure. is it more likely than not? No, I don't think so, because there's a lot of superstars who are going to be available next summer. There's a lot of teams who can get them too, right? The Lakers, the Clippers, Boston's always up to something. Sure. The Rockets are always up to something. The Sixers, I'm sure I'm missing someone else who has cap space. So, like, I think the Mavericks will as well, and they'll have Doncic by that point. There's a lot of competition. And so, I don't know, maybe the star that they get is like basically whoever trickles down to them, right? I don't know. There's a lot of variables, and it's so hard to handicap these things a year out.
Absolutely.
Who have we been able to predict a year out ahead of time, just like switching teams, and saying, oh, called it, right?
Like, yeah, maybe the closest would be a Hayward.
Yeah, I guess, but then.
They're like, we had some Brad Stevens connection, that kind of thing, but.
For sure, Kawhi's in LA now, right? we called that one.
Yeah.
where was Durant going to sign? He was going to sign in DC, or he was going to stay in Oklahoma City, Predictions like this get predicted wrong a week ahead of time, let alone a year. Like, let's see how the Knicks do. Maybe everything goes back to shit. Anything's on the table, right?
Absolutely. If you were running the Knicks, and let's say we've got Kyrie and Butler to choose from, one, not the other. Or, only one, not both. Who do you think would be a better fit for this Knicks team?
Oh, I mean, I think it's Kyrie for sure.
Yeah.
I would be scared. I think that's too much. I would be hesitant on both for injury reasons, just because both have had, I think Kyrie's had two surgeries on his knee now. Jimmy Butler has had his own kind of injury issues over the last year, and I think there might be a little something to the Tom Thibodeau effect of just like grinding his best players into dust if you play there long enough.
Sure.
He's still an awesome player, and I am not diminishing him in any way.
No,
but
he's
those
fantastic.
Are the, I mean, the questions on the margins are the ones you have to weigh when you're deciding whether to give someone $150 or $200 million, right? And that's why we've seen teams just, trade away guys sometimes instead of committing to that kind of cash. The Bulls did it with Butler, the Kings did it with DeMarcus Cousins.
Yeah, and it's very easy. I think along the same lines. It's very easy to look at a Butler and see him. Maybe he's fantastic that first year. Maybe even that second year. I can really easily see the last couple of years just being like, when do we get off this Jimmy Butler contract? But like as a player, yes, he is fantastic right now. But you got to be worried about the wear and tear there. Backing up a little bit. Not jumping so far in the future, just talking about this upcoming season. We kind of mentioned this obliquely earlier, but let's say they do stretch Noah. They've got one final cut to make on the roster. Do you have any sense on who that might be? to get down to 15 before the season starts? I think I did my math there, right? Right? If they cut Noah, that's 16 guys?
Yes, I believe so. And now you're making me, like, in the dead of the summer, check the Knicks roster page, trying to remember. Wait, crap. Who's on their roster again?
Oh, my God. Yeah, we got Porzingis.
He'll definitely be there. That's my hot take for this podcast. I don't know. I think that based on just the way that they're going, you know, Vonleh, okay, right? He's a contender to make the team if he plays well, right? Mm-hmm. Although I believe he's on a non-guaranteed deal.
That's right. Yep.
And you want to give Damian Dotson another shot, right? Because you've invested a second round pick in him. And also, he's the type of player that the Knicks are trying to acquire more of at this point, right? He's a wing. He's got some length. He's got some strength. They want him to shoot a lot more threes. He's still young. I don't know. Luke Kornet, he's on a 1-year, $1.6 million deal. Yeah. What happens if Mitchell Robinson comes along? I think Ron Baker is making too much to be cut in October.
I agree.
And
I'm the last guy on Ron Baker Island.
I feel. Are you? Well, yeah. Why are you still on Ron Baker Island?
I just think that he can give you a really excellent sort of like 15 minutes per game. Like, he's never going to be a starter. Like, of course, that's so far out of the question. But I saw him be a part of so many like kick the Knicks in the ass lineups when they were playing real sluggish. Him and Frank Ntilikina in the backcourt. I just thought he got after it defensively in a way that was valuable in limited time, you know, mostly against backup-type players. And I also think that even though he couldn't shoot for shit, I do think he's got a decent offensive basketball IQ in that. Like, I felt like he takes shots at the right time, passes at the right time. You know, he's not a great finisher at the rim. He's not a great ball handler. But I feel like he understands how to exist in sort of like the 5-on-5 concept, frankly, in a way that's probably better than even maybe like a Moutier at this point, who I have sort of no faith in, although they have vastly different skill sets. I just feel like Baker's defense has some value to it. And if he can at all sort of recapture any of his sort of college shooting ability, he could be like a pretty good backup.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're only fixating on, like, who will the Knicks cut instead of what move will they make, which opens more windows, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they decide Burke is looking good, Ntilikina is looking good, Fizdale, you know, parks a seat or buys some property on Baker Island alongside you, and yeah. Booty is nothing impressive, and they trade him away for, you know, the top 55 protected second-round pick or something, or some other team wants to take a flyer on him. I think any of that can happen, right? Like,
that's a good point.
I don't know. I think we have to open our windows of possibility a little bit more. But I agree. Like, it's gonna be interesting what they do with that 15 spot. Just because, you know, they've gotten lucky there before, so I'm sure they feel like they can get lucky there again, and they're confident in their player development, and so they want to have the right prospect to develop, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And speaking of development, I want to talk a little bit more about David Fizdale. He's mentioned this sort of, he wants guys to earn their minutes. They've talked about they also want to develop young guys. And those two ideas can clash. It's something that's kind of difficult to reconcile. I think it's fair to say Hornacek struggled a bit with this at times last year. For David Fizdale, where do you think earning playing time ends and prioritizing development begins? Like, if I don't know, I guess my I've got this nightmare of like Cantor just never not getting a ton of minutes. Like, because at some point you have to give time, right, to people who may not be as effective as some other guys who probably have a much lower ceiling because they're older and more established and aren't going to grow too much. So how do you think he's going to handle that, looking into your crystal ball again?
So I've thought about this a lot since getting on the beat, right? Because I think that was a criticism of the Knicks over the second half, was that they gave too many minutes to the veterans, right? You would have Courtney Lee playing 37 minutes one night.
Right.
You know, Cantor would start and play and all that. And I talked about this with Scott Perry times. And I think what he does, and it's actually conflating your two ideas, is that giving minutes is part of development. you are developing by earning that time. So I think based on what happened in Orlando, where there's just a lot of minutes given out to like young guys, perhaps without earning it, that it maybe soured him on just that approach of like, okay, we invested a first round pick in this guy, let him play 25 minutes a night. So I think that the two are one thing for them, for the Knicks. It's going to be development off the court, or I guess outside of the game in a lot of ways, you know, practice, pre-practice, post-practice workouts, pre-game workouts, all that type of stuff, drills. And then I think who's ever able to show that they can do it will get playing time. Now, I think the one place where that's going to be very interesting is with Mitchell Robinson, right?
Right.
Because he needs to develop a lot. I think like he really...
do you think he's going to spend time in the G League this season?
I wouldn't be surprised if he does. Yeah. And I think a lot of it, like, all right, so I know everyone went super crazy about Mitchell Robinson in Summer League. And I totally get why. Like, athleticism, crazy off the charts. He was blocking shots, like, hustling to block shots, moving well on defense. And you see all those raw tools.
Yeah.
But I forget who said this, but, like, he had, like, what, 5 dribbles? In right. 5 games.
Right.
You know, the Knicks have already said, Fizdale already said, look, we want to build him into this Clint Capella type of player. And they want to prioritize and strengthen his best skills at the moment so he's able to contribute in games, right? You can get away with a lot of stuff that he did in Summer League because it's a bunch of guys like Mitchell Robinson.
Yeah.
How much can you get away with that when you're playing even a backup like Aaron Baines, right? Like, that guy will he destroys people. You know, not even that all the backups will be of Aaron Baines quality, but there's a big difference between facing Summer League center X and facing even like second or third string NBA center X, right? And so it's going to be interesting how much time they give to him and how much time they devote on the court as part of his development. And I think that'll be the case too for, you know, Moutier, for you know, your guy Ron Baker, for Damian Dotson. Like, you have to, there's veterans on this team that will earn playing time, and I think that will be part of the culture setting that they get, which is, look, man, we want to preach, you know versatile basketball, effort, defense. Look at Lance Thomas, look what he's doing. You want to get more time, you know, play harder than he does or play better than he does, right? And it's not like playing all those veterans will turn the Knicks into a 35-win team either, right? It's not a zero-sum game here. They're not that talented where the veterans will push them to chase the 8th seed, right? Like, you can still lose 25 games.
Do you think some fans might be upset to see how minutes are doled out at first?
Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't be surprised because... Yeah.
You know. I don't know. For me, it's like I totally see that, and I think that's right to a large extent. Any of these things are like, so situational, but it's like if you do have someone like part of me is terrified that Cantor's part of their future plans. It doesn't seem like he is, but I it's like he keeps getting minutes, and I know they're struggling at center without Kristaps being healthy, but like he's someone who does not play defense well, has not historically. Perhaps he's got another gear in him that we haven't seen. I highly doubt it. But what happens if he comes out there and because he's one of the few people who can actually get some buckets efficiently, for better or worse, I happen to think he's a little bit of a black hole on the offensive end, and it kind of like takes away from some of that efficiency. But in terms of its overall impact on the team's play. But if he goes out there and then just is stinking up on defense but keeps getting these minutes, does that hurt people, or is this just my own personal animus towards Enes Kanter, the basketball player, that's coloring my my view of this situation?
I think it's part of your animus. Like, okay. you still need guys who can play well, right? Like, no one wants to be a laughing stock out there, right?
Yeah.
Like, even the Sixers got tired of it, and they're like, man, we suck too much. Like, this is not something we wanted.
I'm sympathetic to that.
It was what they wanted, but like they just decided, Wait, okay, well.
You don't want to be like the Phoenix Suns losing 3 games in a week by 45 points or whatever.
Right. And like Enes Kanter, for his fault, still is really good at a few things. Like, he's a really good rebounder. He's good scorer in the interior. He does hustle. Like, he does play hard. He's not a good defender, but there's value to what he does, and he'll get his minutes for it. And it's not like there's guys behind him pushing him. You know what I mean? Like, if Luke Kornet was worthy of playing 25 minutes, he would get it. But he's got his own problems. Mitchell Robinson's got his own problems.
I wish Kyle O'Quinn were here this year just so I could be like, he's pushing him. because last year I think he's
right. But is that what you want? Like, you want another 28-year-old taking all those minutes? You were just complaining that the rooks weren't getting?
No, well, what I really wanted them to do, honestly, is Enes Kanter's in the last year of his contract. Why not cut him? See if you can keep Kyle LeQuinn, who I think is actually a valuable basketball player who's gotten better every single year. Is this a make or break roster move? No. And I guess it's just frustrating to see someone who doesn't figure to be a big part of their plans getting so many minutes.
Take that to its logical.
You're right.
Like, extrapolate that to its logical.
You're
conclusion.
Not wrong.
Who on this team is definitely part of the long term plans other than Kevin Knox, Frank Ntilikina, Kristaps Porzingis, and Tim Hardaway by way of his very large contract.
Yeah, you're right.
And Kevin Knox might start. So that's one thing that you were worried about just being set right off the board, is that Kevin Knox will get 20 minutes, 20, 30 minutes, whatever it is, whatever he earns, right? And, okay, that's one thing you can't gripe about.
It's true. Gun to your head, opening night, starting lineup, who do you think we got in there?
I never get the expression "gun to your head."
I know. I wrote it down and was like, I don't like this, and then I said it and I didn't like it. I'm kind
of. There has to be a better idiom,
right?
To express that sense of urgency.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
Let's put it this way: we're in an extremely urgent situation.
we're in a very dire spot. Your parking meter is about to run out, and you will get a $35 ticket for a $1 parking spot.
You're blocking the box. Yeah. You're in danger of getting a $400 ticket. In order for traffic to move, you got to say who's going to start. Let's do that.
I would guess.
That's it. What a great episode, right? If I do say so myself. I want to thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks if you have not already. It's important for us to grow our audience. Do your part. Sorry, that felt so scolding. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks for bonus takes and general camaraderie, or at NBA Injury Report for jokes about basketball. Be chill to each other. Spay or neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it battle with brown. Flush it down. Always salt the pasta water. Take that for data. Biggie's the best rapper of all time. Peace.